To me, London seems like a very happy little girl, so it's clear you've been doing something right.
So, what do you think I should do? I asked, trying to digest what she'd said.
Why don't you talk to London and ask her what she wants to do, and then just trust your instincts?
You make it sound so easy.
Other people's problems are always easier to solve. Haven't you learned that yet?
She laughed, a sound at once reassuring and refreshing. I have to say, sometimes you remind me a lot of Marge.
I'm going to take that as a compliment.
It is. Emily and I chatted for another hour, and as always, after speaking with her, I felt better. More grounded. More like myself again, and it was enough to spur me to spend an hour on the computer, getting a jump on the next day's work. In the morning, while London was eating her cereal, I explained what Miss Hamshaw had said.
You mean I can't be in the recital?
I'm sorry, sweetie. Are you mad you can't dance in the show? London's reaction was immediate.
It's okay,
she said with a shrug.
I didn't want to be a tree anyway.
If it makes you feel better. I thought you were a very good tree. She looked at me as though I had cornstalks growing out of my ears.
It's a tree, Daddy. The butterfly gets to move around. Trees don't.
Hmm, I said, nodding. Good point.
Do I have to go to dance on Friday?
Do you want to go? When she shrugged instead of answering, it wasn't hard to read between the lines. If you don't want to go, then I don't think you should go. You should only go to dance because you like it and you want to go. For a moment, London studied the floating marshmallows in her bowl of Lucky Charms, and I wondered if she had heard me. Then,
I don't think I want to go anymore. Miss Hamshaw doesn't like me very much.
Fine, I said. You no longer have to go to dance. London hesitated, and when she looked up at me, I thought I detected a trace of anxiety in her expression.
What's Mom going to say?
She'll probably get angry, I thought. She'll understand, I said, trying to sound more confident than I felt. After dropping London off at school, I went to the studio, where I met the animal trainer and Gus, a bull mastiff. The commercial would emphasize tenacity, and the plan was to have Gus tugging relentlessly on a dog toy. Intercut with the images of the dog would be four screenshots with the following captions. When you've been injured on the job, you need a determined and relentless attorney. Call the offices of Joey Taglieri. He won't stop until you get the money you deserve. Gus the Bull Mastiff ended up being quite a talented actor, and filming wrapped well before noon. London wasn't quite as chipper when I picked her up from school as she'd been the day before. Limiting activity in TV required a bit of creativity, and I decided to bring her to the pet store. I needed shavings for the hamsters anyway, but I thought she might enjoy looking at the fish. There were more than 50 different aquariums. Each aquarium had placards that listed the specific types of fish. London and I spent more than an hour moving from tank to tank and naming the various kinds of fish. It wasn't quite SeaWorld, I'll admit, but it wasn't a bad way to spend a quiet afternoon. On the way out, she spent some time playing with a few Cocker Spaniel puppies that were tumbling around in a low pen. They were very cute, and I breathed a sigh of relief when she didn't ask for one.
That was fun, Daddy,
she said as we headed to the car. I had the bag of shavings and hamster food tucked beneath my arm. I thought you might like that.
We should get some fish. Some of them were really pretty.
Aquariums are even harder to clean than hamster cages.
I'm sure you could figure it out, Daddy.
Maybe. But I don't know where we would put the aquarium.
We could put it on the kitchen table.
That's an idea. But where would we eat?
We could eat on the couch.
I couldn't suppress a smile. I loved talking to my daughter. I truly did. On the way home, I swung by the grocery store. Using one of the recipes that Liz had given me, I picked up the ingredients for chicken quesadillas. I let London pretty much fix dinner on her own. I walked her through each step, and I sliced the chicken after she'd sautéed it. But aside from those things, London did everything herself. She cooked the chicken, added the slices to tortillas, added the grated cheese, and folded the tortillas before putting each one into a pan so it could toast on both sides. When the meal was ready, she directed me to the table and brought over two plates of food, utensils, and two glasses of milk. "This looks delicious, and it smells great," I commented.
I want to take a picture for Auntie Liz and Auntie Marge before you start.
Okay, I said. I handed my phone to her and she snapped pictures of both plates, then texted them to both.
Where did you learn how to text?
I asked, amazed.
Mommy showed me. Bodhi, too. He showed me on Emily's phone. I think I'm old enough for a phone.
You might be, but I'd rather talk to you in person. She rolled her eyes, but I could tell she thought it was funny.
You can eat now if you want, she said.
I cut a piece with my fork and took a bite. Wow, I said. This is very tasty. You did a fantastic job.
Thank you, she said. Don't forget to drink your milk.
I won't, I said. I couldn't remember the last time I'd had a glass of milk. It tasted better than I remembered. This is amazing, I said. I can't believe how big you're getting.
I'm almost 6.
I know. Do you know what you want for your birthday? She thought about it.
Maybe an aquarium, she said, and lots of pretty fish. Or maybe a poodle like Noodle.
Maybe, I thought to myself. Spending the day at the pet store hadn't been such a good idea. After London had gone to bed, I gave Emily a call. I caught her while she was lying in bed, and as always we drifted into an easy conversation that was a mixture of reminiscing about our earlier years and discussing details of our current lives. The call lasted for nearly 40 minutes, and when I hung up the phone I realized that talking to Emily was not only becoming part of my routine, but one of the brightest spots of my days. On Friday afternoon, Vivian texted that she would be arriving between 9 and 10, which was well past London's normal bedtime. After receiving the text at work, I took a moment to wonder what, if anything, would be expected of me when she arrived, since London might not be awake. Would Vivian finally want to talk? Watch TV in the family room with or without me? Or would she head straight to the guest room? And what was I going to do all weekend? I tried to repeat Emily's Zen mantra, but it didn't help. Part of me, I knew, was still trying to figure out how to please Vivian. Old habits die hard. With dance class off the schedule, I opted for another date night with London, with the idea of keeping her awake until Vivian arrived. I thought bringing her to dinner and a movie would be fun, and I was able to find a kids' movie that would end in time to have us home by 9. After that, London could hop in the bath and put on her pajamas, and with any sort of luck, Vivian would arrive right around then. I revealed my plans to London when I picked her up from school, and as soon as we got home, she raced up the steps to start getting ready. You have plenty of time, I called after her. We don't have to leave until 5:30.
I want to start now, she called back.
She was fully dressed by 4 and found me in the den, working on the computer, finalizing the still shots I planned to intercut in the dog commercial. She'd chosen a white blouse, white skirt, and white shoes and stockings, her hair held back with a white headband. You look very beautiful, I said, mentally crossing off all Italian restaurants from the list of possible dinner destinations. A single slip in her outfit would be massacred.
Thank you, she said, but I don't like the band-aid on my forehead or my splint.
I didn't even notice them, I said. I'm sure you'll be the prettiest girl in the whole restaurant. She beamed.
When are we going to leave?
We still have an hour and a half.
Okay, she said. I can go sit in the family room until we're ready.
You could play with your Barbies, I suggested.
I don't want to get my dress wrinkled.
Of course. What would you like to do?
I don't know, but I don't want to get dirty.
I thought about it. Would you like to play Hoot Owl Hoot again? She clapped her hands.
Yes!
We played for an hour before I went to change. Like the last time, I donned slacks and a blazer along with a stylish new pair of loafers. London was waiting for me in the foyer, and trying to add a bit of ceremony to the occasion, I bowed before opening the door for her. We had dinner at an upscale steakhouse, and after a couple of minutes of adult-like conversation, London slipped back into little girl mode. We talked about Bodhi and her teacher and school, and about the kind of fish she wanted in the aquarium. Afterward, we went to the movie, which left London energized, perhaps it was the Raisinettes, and eager to see her mom. Hurrying upstairs when we got back home, she quickly bathed and slipped into her pajamas. Vivian arrived at the house not long after I'd begun to read. London jumped from the bed and ran down the stairs. I followed, watching as London threw herself into her mother's arms, Vivian's eyes closing in contented delight.
I'm so glad I got to see you before you went to sleep, Vivian said.
Me too. Daddy and me went on a date. We had dinner and we saw a movie and we talked about my aquarium.
Aquarium? For her birthday, I said. How are you?
Good. That's a long drive, especially when it starts at rush hour.
I nodded, feeling strangely out of place. I motioned upstairs. I've already read to her if you want to go up. She faced London again.
Do you want Mommy to read you a few stories?
Yes,
London cried. I watched as the two of them climbed the stairs. And though I was in my house with my wife and daughter, I suddenly felt very much alone. I retreated to the master bedroom. I didn't want to talk to Vivian, nor did I think she wanted that either. Instead, I read in bed and tried not to think about the fact that Vivian would be spending the night under the same roof. I fantasized briefly about her sneaking into my bedroom and wondered what I would do. Would I acquiesce with the excuse that we were still married? Or even as a last hurrah? Or would I have the resolve that Emily showed when David had made a pass at her? I wanted to think I'd be more like Emily, but I wasn't sure I was as strong as she'd been. Nonetheless, I had a feeling that neither of us would be happy afterward. I was no longer a part of her future, and it would only reinforce the hold that Vivian still had over me, despite all she'd done. Moreover, I suspected that I'd feel guilty, because as I imagined making love to Vivian again, I realized with sudden clarity that what I wanted even more than that was for it to be Emily instead. In the morning, I rose early and went for a long run. I showered, made myself breakfast, and was on my second cup of coffee when Vivian found me in the kitchen. She was in long pajamas, a set I'd bought her for her birthday a couple of years back. She went to the cupboard and pulled out a tea bag, then added water to the tea kettle on the stove. "Sleep well?" I asked.
"I did, thanks. The mattress in the guest room is better than I remembered, but I might just be tired."
"Have you decided what you want to do with London today? After art class, I mean?"
"I don't want to do anything too demanding. She should still take it easy. We could go to Discovery Place, but I want to see what London wants to do."
"I'm going to the office," I informed her. "I want to get as much done for the plastic surgeon as I can, especially since he dropped everything to help London."
"Tell him thank you from me. He did a very good job. I peeked at it last night."
The tea kettle whistled and she added hot water to her cup. She seemed to debate whether or not to join me at the table before finally taking a seat. "There's something I need to tell you," I said, "about dance."
"What about dance?"
Vivian took a tentative sip from her steaming cup. I recapped everything for her, trying to keep it as succinct as possible, including the fact that London wasn't going to be allowed to dance at the recital.
"Huh," Vivian said. "And you told her that London was in the hospital?"
"I told her. It didn't matter. And then London told me straight up that she doesn't want to go anymore. She doesn't think Miss Hamshaw likes her."
"If she doesn't want to go, then don't make her go. It's just dance."
Vivian gave an elaborate shrug. She spoke without the slightest acknowledgement of her previous insistence that London attend in the first place. There was no reason to bring it up, but it made me wonder whether I'd ever be able to understand what made Vivian tick, and whether I'd ever really understood her at all. London came downstairs while we were still in the kitchen. She wandered over to the table, still dopey with sleep.
"Hi, Mommy and Daddy," she said, giving both of us hugs. "What can I get you for breakfast?" Vivian asked. "Lucky Charms." "Okay, sweetie," Vivian said. "I'll get it for you."
I folded my newspaper and stood, trying to mask my amazement at how easily Vivian had acquiesced to London's request for a sugary cereal. "Have fun today, ladies," I said. I spent nearly the entire day on the computer, finalizing everything I could do for the tech aspect of the plastic surgeon's ad campaign, aside from the posting of the patient videos to the website. I forwarded the information to my tech guy and also emailed reminders to the patients about filming on Tuesday. It was nearly 6 when I finally looked up. I texted Vivian asking what time Linda would be going to bed because I wanted to read to her. Vivian answered immediately with the time. Because I'd worked through lunch, I grabbed a sandwich at the deli across the street and decided to give Emily a call. "Am I catching you at a bad time?" I asked, idly cleaning up my desk.
"Not at all," she said. "Bodie's playing in his room and I was just cleaning the kitchen. How's the weekend going?"
"So far, so good. I was at the office all day, got a ton of work done. I'm going to head home in a bit to read to London."
"I saw her today when I dropped Bodie off at art. Vivian, too."
"How'd that go?"
"I didn't stick around to chat," she said.
"Good plan. I'll probably find a way to hide from Vivian after I read to London, too. No reason to press my luck. What are your plans for tonight?"
"Nothing. Finish cleaning the kitchen, watch TV, maybe have a glass of wine after Bodie goes to bed."
Unbidden, thoughts of making love to Emily resurfaced, as they had the other night. I pushed them firmly away. Do you want some company? I asked. After I finish with London, I could swing by for an hour or so. Maybe you can show me that painting you've been working on. She hesitated, and I was certain she was going to say no.
I'd like that, she said instead.
I made it home just as London was getting ready for bed, and as usual, Vivian and I slipped into our familiar roles. She read first, and then I went up to read to London. London chattered on about her day. In addition to art class and Discovery Place, they'd gone to the mall, and by the time I turned out the light, Vivian was already in the guest room with the door closed. I knocked on the door and heard her voice from the other side.
Yes?
I'm going out for a little bit. I just wanted to let you know in case London wakes up. I should be back before 11. I could almost hear her asking, "Where are you going?" in the silence that followed.
Okay, she said after a moment. Thanks for letting me know.
Emily had left a note tacked to the door, inviting me in and directing me to the back porch. I moved quietly through the house, trying not to wake Bodie. I felt a little like a teenager trying to sneak past my parents, and wondered if the child inside us ever truly left any of us. Emily was barefoot tonight, in jeans and a red blouse, with her long legs propped against a low bench that lined the porch. A chair had been placed next to her. On the porch table stood an open bottle of wine and an empty glass. She held a half-full glass in her own hand.
Perfect timing, she said. I just checked on Bodie and he's sound asleep.
London, too.
I got started without you, she said, raising her own glass. Help yourself.
I poured and sat next to her. Thanks for having me over.
When a friend says he has to hide, my door is open. How is it really, though?
I considered the question before answering. We haven't fought, but we haven't seen much of each other either. It's strange, though. It feels like there's this awkward heaviness in the house.
Emotions are heavy things, she said, and it's still early for both of you. How was London when you read to her?
She was fine. They had a good day.
Do you think she knows what's going on yet?
I think she knows there's something different, but that's it.
That's probably a good thing for now. It's hard enough to get through this stage without worrying about your child as well.
I nodded, knowing she was right. Do you sit out here a lot?
Less than I should. Sometimes I forget how pretty it is. I love seeing the stars between all the trees and the sound of crickets.
She shook her head.
I don't know. I guess I just get stuck in my routines, which is why I still haven't gotten around to listing the house yet. I get lazy.
I don't think you're lazy. We're just creatures of habit. I took a sip of wine, letting a comfortable silence settle between us. Finally, I said, I feel like I should thank you.
Why?
I felt her turn toward me, her eyes seeking me out in the darkness. For letting me come over. For talking to me on the phone. For the advice you give. For putting up with my confusion and whining. Everything.
That's what friends are for.
Emily, we're old friends, I said. But it's been a long time, and it's not like we've been close these past 15 years. Somehow, though, in just a short time, you've become one of my best friends. Again. I could see the starlight flickering in her eyes.
I read something about friendship once and it stuck with me. It goes like this. Friendship isn't about how long you know someone. It's about who walks into your life, says, I'm here for you, and then proves it.
I smiled. I like that.
Russ, you sound like you think you're a burden to me, but you're not. Believe it or not, I like talking to you, and I like that we've rekindled our friendship. Aside from Grace and Marguerite, it's just Bodie and me. And I don't know, there's something so comforting about our shorthand, not having to explain everything about who we are and where we came from. We know all that stuff already.
Guess I'm like an old shoe, huh? She laughed.
A favorite shoe, maybe. One that always fit just right and you were never able to replace.
I felt a genuine warmth flowing from her then, and it was such a reassuring sensation. One that I had missed, I realized, in all these uncertain years with Vivian. I feel the same way, Em. I stared at her. I really do. She was quiet for a moment, rotating the glass of wine in her hands.
Do you remember that night when we got stuck on the Ferris wheel? The night of the fireworks?
I remember, I said.
I thought you were going to propose to me that night, she said softly. And when you didn't, I was so disappointed.
I'm sorry, I said, meaning it.
Don't be. It's silly.
She waved my apology away.
The point I'm trying to make is that I would have said yes, and maybe we would have gotten married. But that also means I wouldn't have Bodhi, and you wouldn't have London. And then who would we be? Maybe we would have ended up getting divorced, or hate each other now.
I think we could have made it. Her smile seemed to hold a trace of melancholy.
Maybe. There's no way of knowing. We've both been knocked around enough by life to understand how unpredictable life can be.
I stared at her. You do know that you continually say things that surprise me and make me think. That's because I majored in the humanities, not business. I laughed, suddenly flooded with gratitude that she'd come back into my life, just when I needed her most. It wasn't until well past midnight that I finally made it home.
You were out late last night,
Vivian remarked as we crossed paths in the kitchen the next morning.
I thought you said you'd be home by 11.
Despite the late night, I'd risen early and was ready to start my day by the time Vivian made it downstairs. Time got away from me, I offered. I could tell she was curious about where I'd been and what I'd been doing, but it wasn't her business. Not anymore. Changing the subject, I asked, What time do you think you'll be leaving, since you have to drive?
6:30? I don't know for sure yet.
Do you want to have a family dinner before you go?
I was going to take London out for an early dinner.
All right, I said. I'll be here at 6 then. She seemed to be waiting for me to announce something about my plans for the day. Instead, I went back to sipping my coffee and perusing the paper. When she realized I wasn't going to speak, she finally went back upstairs, no doubt so she could shower and get ready for her day with London. Chapter 21. Clicking on All Cylinders. Emily and I saw each other 6 times before we ever slept together. Our first date after the wedding was the hike she'd suggested. We also went to a concert. We'd had lunch and dinner a few times. By then, I was already falling hard for her, but I wasn't quite sure how she felt about me. That morning, I picked her up early and we drove to Wrightsville Beach. We lunched at a small oceanside restaurant before strolling to the water's edge. We collected seashells in my baseball cap as we rambled down the beach in the direction of the pier, and I could still picture the way the breeze lifted glinting strands of her hair as she bent down to retrieve a particularly beautiful shell. We both knew what was coming. I'd arranged for a hotel room for the night, but instead of growing more nervous as the day wore on, she seemed to settle into a state of languid ease. Late in the afternoon, after we checked in, she took a long shower while I lay on the bed, flipping through channels on the television. Afterward, she wandered out wrapped only in a towel to retrieve a change of clothes.
What are you watching?
You, I could have said, but instead I answered, Nothing really, just waiting for you to finish in the bathroom so I can shower too.
It won't be long, she promised.
It occurred to me that Emily, more than any woman to that point in my life, made me feel comfortable because she always seemed so comfortable with me. I gave her a few minutes before getting up from the bed. By then she was dressed and applying a little makeup.
What are you doing? She asked.
Just watching you. I met her gaze in the mirror.
Why?
I think watching you put on makeup is sexy. She turned around and puckered her lips. We kissed and she turned back around. What was that for?
Once I get my lipstick on, you won't be able to kiss me for a while, unless you want to wear lipstick too.
I continued to watch for another minute before heading back to the bed. I plopped down, pleasantly buzzed by her kiss and the promise of the evening to come. We ate at a bistro overlooking the intracoastal waterway, lingering over dinner long after the sun went down. On our way out, we heard music and followed the sound to a bar down the street, where we found a live band playing. We danced until the bar closed, pleasantly weary as we strolled back to the hotel after midnight. Electricity crackled between us as I unlocked the door and we stepped into our room. The maids had turned down the bed and the lights had been dimmed. I slipped my arms around Emily and pulled her close, feeling the warmth of her body against my own. I kissed her then, our tongues coming together while my hands slowly began to explore the contours of her body. She gave a shallow gasp and our passion became more intense as I felt her breast through the thin fabric of her dress. Her fingers reached for the buttons of my shirt. We continued to kiss as she undid them one by one. I lifted her dress and she raised her arms to assist me. I slipped it over her head while my shirt fell to the ground, her skin fiery against my own. Her bra came next, and soon we were naked on the bed and moving together, lost in our own feelings and the mysteries of each other. It finally happened on Wednesday, and I'll admit that I was as surprised as the receptionist, but I'll get to that. First things first. On Sunday, Marge and Liz weren't at my parents' when I arrived, and when I called her house, Marge sounded utterly miserable. Coughing, achy, feverish, the whole nine yards. When my mom found out, she decided then and there to make chicken soup, which I was then tasked with delivering to Marge. If possible, she looked worse than she sounded, and joked that even Liz was keeping her distance, since she had clearly been infected with the plague. Deciding to take my chances, I hugged her anyway, before heading home. Vivian left around 6:30 after bringing London back from dinner. Her departure was as cordial as the rest of the weekend had been. She asked no questions about my day, and I asked no questions about hers. Instead, we simply wished each other well as she headed out the door. After I put London to bed, I called Emily to ask if she would mind picking up London from school on Tuesday, since I'd be filming all day. Emily assured me that it wouldn't be a problem. On Monday, Taglieri's new website went live, and the first two commercials began to air. I posted the commercials on his website as well as on YouTube. I worked from home so I could watch the spots as they aired, feeling an almost physical thrill as I watched them. Meanwhile, I worked on templates for direct mail and billboards for the plastic surgeon, getting the messaging right. On Tuesday, I filmed his patients, a very long day as I'd predicted, and then went to pick up London at Emily's, where we ended up staying for dinner, much to London's delight. On Wednesday, as I was driving to the office, I received a text from Taglieri asking me to call him, and I felt my heart sink. Maybe because the previous weekend had been devoid of drama with Vivian, I felt certain that he was calling with what could only be bad news on the divorce front. I returned the call right after I parked, standing outside my office. I felt like I needed to be standing when I spoke to him. "Hi, Joey," I said, trying to keep my voice steady. "I got your text. What's up?" "My business," he said. "My future bank account." "Excuse me?" "You know that new toll-free number? The one you splattered all over those two commercials? The phone's been ringing off the hook. It's crazy. People love that commercial with the kid. They think it's hilarious. And now we can direct them to the website for basic information. It's incredible. I never would have believed it. My staff is going crazy just trying to keep up."
"You're happy," I said, stunned.
"Damn right I'm happy. When's that dog commercial going to run? And you need to come up with some more ideas, so put your thinking cap on."
"I can do that," I said.
"And Russ?"
"Yeah?"
"Thanks."
I hung up the phone and strode into the office, feeling like I was 6 inches taller. When I waved to the receptionist, I watched as she raised her hand.
"Mr. Green, don't you want your messages?"
"I have messages?"
"Two, actually. They're both from law firms."
Again, I thought of Vivian and wondered if she'd told her attorney to reach out to me directly. If so, I wasn't sure why Vivian hadn't given the lady my cell phone number. As far as I knew, Vivian didn't even know my work number. But it wasn't Vivian's attorney who'd called. One call was from a firm in Greenville, South Carolina that specialized in class actions. The other from a personal injury firm in Hickory. In both cases, I was connected immediately to senior partners, each of whom seemed eager to speak with me.
"I like those commercials you're doing for Joey Taglieri, and we were wondering if you would consider coming in to make a presentation about your services."
After hanging up, I let out a whoop of excitement. I just had to tell someone. I reached for my phone, about to call Marge, but then decided at the last second to call Emily instead. Floating. That's how I felt the rest of the week. Like I was floating free of the worries that had been weighing me down for months. Though it might be only temporary, what goes up always comes down and all that, I decided I was going to enjoy every single minute, even if I didn't land the two new firms as clients. While it would be great to sign those firms, I received 3 more calls from lawyers by Friday, making 5 new potential clients, all of whom had reached out to me. I set up presentations with all of them, and depending on how many I signed, I thought I might be looking at potentially needing to hire another person just to keep up. The Phoenix Agency was officially on its way.
"What are you going to do with all that extra money you'll be making?" Marge said to me over lunch.
It was Friday afternoon, and I decided to work only a half day as a reward. Because you happen to have a sister who's in the mood for a new car. Wouldn't that be nice? I always knew you'd make it. I haven't made it yet, I cautioned. I still have to make the presentations. You're good at that part. You just weren't so good at getting the phone to ring. I smiled, still on a high. I'm so excited and relieved. I can only imagine. How are you feeling? She made a face. A little better. I'm not coughing too much during the day now, but the nights are still pretty rough. I finally convinced my idiot doctor to prescribe some antibiotics, but I just started taking them yesterday. He said I might not feel any better until Monday. That's a bummer. It's bad for Liz, too. I kept waking her up, so I've started sleeping in the guest room. So Mom's chicken soup didn't work? No, but it tasted good. She pushed her sandwich away. What are your plans this weekend? Vivian's not coming, is she? She'll be here next weekend, for London's birthday. And I can't imagine London not wanting Bodhi to be there, which means that Emily will probably make an appearance at the party as well. And me, Marge said, grinning. I can't wait to watch. Nothing's going to happen. She's been on good behavior lately. Let's see how long that lasts, Marge said with a skeptical look. By the way, are you going to Mom and Dad's tomorrow? Liz and I are planning to swing by for a little while, especially since we weren't there last weekend. Since I had the plague, I mean. Thank God you haven't given it to Liz, I remarked. Yes, especially since she's getting crushed at work. One of the other therapists in her practice group has been on maternity leave since late July. Speaking of maternity, when do you and Liz meet with the fertility doctor? Didn't you say sometime in November? She nodded. On the 20th, the Friday before Thanksgiving. What happens if you're both able to have kids? Would you both get pregnant? I'd have the child. I always thought it would be fun to be pregnant. Tell me if you're still feeling that way around the 8-month mark. By the time London was born, Vivian was thoroughly sick of being pregnant. That's Vivian, and she was younger. I know this will be the only time for me, and I'd make sure to enjoy every minute of it. Having a child is going to change your life. It's changed mine, that's for sure. She looked almost wistful. I can't wait. When I picked London up from school, the first thing she asked when she got in the car was whether we were going to have date night again.
Since it's Friday and Mommy's not here?
Why not? That sounds like a terrific idea.
What should we do?
London asked, already buzzing with anticipation. I said. We could have dinner at home or go out. Or we could go to the real aquarium.
The aquarium! Can we really go there?
Of course. I'm pretty sure it's open until 8 o'clock.
Can we ask Bodhi if he wants to come?
You want to bring Bodhi on our date night?
Yes, and I can wear my butterfly wings, the ones I got at the zoo, and he can wear his wings, too.
To the aquarium?
For the fish, she said.
I wasn't sure I understood the correlation, but if it made her happy, that was fine with me. I can call, but Bodhi might be busy tonight. It's kind of last minute.
We should try, and Miss Emily can come, too.
I waited until we got home before calling Emily. When I asked about the aquarium, she told me to hold on and then called out to Bodhi.
Do you want to go to the aquarium tonight? London is going.
Yes!
I heard Bodhi shout before Emily came back on the line.
I take it you heard him?
I did, I said.
What time are you thinking?
How about I pick you up in an hour? She hesitated.
How about I pick you up? DVDs for the kids, remember? I know it's not that far, but we'll be dealing with rush hour traffic. Are you okay with doing the driving again?
Sure, I agreed.
Text me the address, and let me start getting the two of us ready. See you in a bit.
Oh, I said. London wants Bodhi to wear the wings he got at the zoo.
Why?
I don't know. She laughed.
It's fine with me, and way better than having him run around with a lightsaber.
As was becoming her habit, London took a while to get ready for date night. Ultimately, she picked a white skirt with lace, a long-sleeved pink top, pink sneakers, and, of course, the butterfly wings. I'd opted for a more casual outfit. Dark pants, dark shirt, and comfortable shoes. That's an eye-catching outfit, I said. You definitely look ready to see the fish.
I want to get some ideas for my aquarium, she said.
For her birthday, I thought. At least she was making it easy for me, even if I'd end up cleaning the thing. Do you want to pick a movie? We'll be riding with Miss Emily again.
I think we should watch Finding Nemo.
Sounds like a good choice to me. She found the case and brought it to me. As she was handing it over, I received another message from Taglieri. Calls still coming in like crazy. You're the man. What a great week this was turning out to be. What I didn't know was that it was going to get a whole lot better. Sea Life Aquarium was located in Concord, about 15 miles north of Charlotte, but the traffic meant it took nearly 40 minutes to get there. Not that any of us minded. I caught Emily up on my recent work triumphs, hinted at Marge and Liz's plans to start a family, and talked about my parents. She shared the latest updates on her family and her paintings for the show. Again, by unspoken agreement, we didn't mention Vivian, David, or our shared past. At the aquarium, the kids raced from one exhibit to the next, just as they'd done at the zoo. Emily and I trailed behind, keeping an eye on them. As we followed, I couldn't help noticing the glances that Emily drew from other men. Most of them were with their own families and were circumspect. I'm not sure Emily noticed at all, but I found myself attuned to the way people reacted to her in a way I hadn't before. We finished our tour of the aquarium, the biggest hits for the kids being the sharks, sea turtles, seahorses, and the octopus. Just as we were stepping out the door onto the promenade, I heard music drifting out of an open door marked as an employee entrance. The song that was on came to an end, and a radio DJ came on the air announcing the song coming up. J.D. Eicher's 2x2. I paused. Did you hear that, London? There's a song called 2x2, just like your favorite book.
Is it about animals?
I don't know, I said. The DJ was still talking and I turned to Emily. She was supposed to have a recital tonight. She wanted to be the butterfly.
Right now, I am a butterfly,
London announced, letting her wings catch the evening breeze. Well, since it's date night, would you like to dance with me?
Yes!
A moment later, the song started, and I took London's hands. By that time, the sun was low in the sky, twilight turning the world sepia-colored. Aside from Emily and Bodhi, we had the promenade to ourselves. I found the lyrics strangely affecting as I danced with my daughter. She swayed and bounced and held my hands, revealing flashes of the young woman she would become and the innocent girl she still was.
We'll find our way two by two.
It was, I realized, the first dance I'd ever shared with my daughter, and I didn't know when or if it would happen again. I couldn't imagine dancing with her in a few years. By then, the idea would probably embarrass her. So I lived in the moment and gave myself over to the dance, thankful for yet another wonder at the end of an already unforgettable week. That was the most touching thing I've ever seen, Emily said to me as we walked to the car. I took some photos with my phone. I'll text them to you later. It was pretty special, I agreed, still drifting on the melody of the song. I'm just glad Bodhi didn't try to cut in.
That wouldn't happen. I asked him to dance, but he said no. Then he told me he found a snail and he wanted me to pick it up.
Little boys and little girls are certainly different, aren't they?
You get sugar and spice and everything nice, she said, referring to the nursery rhyme. Meanwhile, I get the snail.
No puppy dog tails, though.
That's only because he couldn't find one.
I laughed. I'll bet the kids are starving.
I'm starving, too.
The real question is whether we let them pick where we eat or whether we get to pick.
Just a warning that if we don't find something quickly, Bodhi might start getting cranky. And once that happens, you don't want to be anywhere in the vicinity.
So, Chick-fil-A?
Bingo, she said.
Needless to say, the kids were thrilled. London was still wired when we finally got home, but her energy level started to crash by the time she was in her pajamas. I called Vivian and let London FaceTime with her for a few minutes. Afterward, I decided to read 2x2. As I finished, I remembered that Emily had promised to text the photographs of the two of us dancing. Pulling out my phone, I saw that she had, and quickly scrolled through them with London. Don't we look good? London took the phone from me and stared at the photos.
You can't see my face because my hair is in the way.
That's because you were looking at my feet, I said.
That's okay. I was looking at my feet, too.
She continued to scrutinize the images. As she did, I remembered the photos I'd removed from the house and made a mental note to print one of these and have it framed. London handed the phone back to me.
What are we going to do tomorrow?
There's art class, of course. And after that, we're going to see Nana and Papa. Is there anything else you want to do?
I don't know.
You could help me clean the hamster cage.
No, thanks. It's kind of icky.
Right. Smelly, too, I thought. Let's see what you're in the mood to do when you wake up tomorrow, I said, tucking the covers around her. I kissed her goodnight and went back downstairs. I turned on the TV, but the photos that Emily had taken seemed to call to me. I pulled out my phone again and lingered over the images with a smile on my face, more grateful than ever to be the father to such an amazing little girl. Emily waved as soon as I walked into art class with London the following morning. London ran over to hug her, then went to chase down Bodhi.
That was fun last night, she said. I think we're a good team when it comes to keeping the kids entertained.
Agreed, I said, reflecting that I'd been happily entertained as well. And thanks for the photos. I'm probably going to get one or two framed. Even with just an iPhone, you clearly have an artist's eye.
Maybe. Or maybe I just sent you the best of the 100 or so I shot, she said with a mischievous smile.
She jerked a thumb in the direction of the strip mall.
You want to grab a cup of coffee while the kids are occupied?
I can't think of anything I'd rather do, I said, holding open the door for her. And I meant it.
It's the cancer,
my mom insisted.
I just know he has the cancer.
Standing in the kitchen, my mom was reprising her usual worries in particularly urgent tones. We'd barely walked in the door after art class when she pulled me aside for a hushed conference. Was he having trouble breathing again?
No, she said, but I had the dream about the hospital again last night. Only this time there was no purple pig, and this time the doctor was a woman. She was talking about the cancer.
Did you ever think it might just be a dream?
Do you have the same dreams twice?
I have no idea. I don't remember most of my dreams. But I wouldn't read too much into it unless you've actually noticed something amiss with Dad. She looked at me with a mournful expression.
The cancer sometimes doesn't show many symptoms until it's too late.
So you're saying that because he feels fine, he might be sick? She crossed her arms.
Explain to me why I dreamed it twice.
I sighed. Do you want me to talk to Dad again?
No, she said. But I do want you to keep an eye on him, and if you see something, I'll need your help getting him to the doctor.
I'm not sure I'd even know what to look for, I protested.
You'll know it when you see it.
Did Mom waylay you about the cancer? Marge asked, pouring herself a glass of sweet tea from the pitcher on the table. I'd just joined her and Liz on the back porch after sending London off to help my mom in the kitchen. As usual, my dad was in the garage, probably lifting an engine out with his bare hands. Oh, yeah, I said, holding out a glass of my own for Marge to fill. It's been a few months since she last brought it up, so I guess I should have expected it. I rubbed a hand over my face. I hope I never get like that.
Like what?
Living in fear all the time.
She has good reason, Marge said. The cancer knocked off her entire side of the family. Don't you ever worry about it?
I don't think I've ever had time to worry about it.
I think about it, Marge said. I don't worry, but it does cross my mind from time to time. But I have the sense that if Dad ever starts to develop cancer, the healthy cells will strut over, tap the bad cells on their shoulders, and then proceed to beat the crap out of them.
The afternoon sun played across Marge's amused expression, throwing her cheekbones into sharp relief. Hey, you're looking good, by the way, I remarked. You've lost some weight.
Thanks for finally noticing, she said, preening a little bit. You didn't say anything yesterday.
I'm paying attention now. Are you on a diet?
Of course, I'm going on vacation, meaning I'll be hitting the beach and a gal's got to look her best.
Besides, with all that running, you were starting to look better than me, and I just couldn't have that. I rolled my eyes and turned to Liz. And how are you doing, Liz? Marge said you're drowning at work.
Yeah, I've been covering for another therapist who's been on leave. Lately, I spend most of my free time fantasizing about our getaway to Costa Rica. I've even been trying out some Latin American recipes, but Marge won't eat any of it because of the carbs. I keep reminding her that people in Costa Rica aren't as overweight as they are here in the U.S., but to no avail.
I know my body, Marge countered, and it helped that I was sick, since my appetite was non-existent.
On a more interesting note, though, did you see the fair, Emily, today, at art class?
I pointedly turned to Liz.
Do you know what I like about you?
What's that? You don't seem to feel the need to pry into my personal life every time we talk.
She doesn't have to pry, Marge said. As a general rule, you blurt out everything you're thinking or feeling without prompting.
Marge probably had a point, but still. I sighed. I not only saw her today, but we also went to the aquarium last night. With the kids. We're friends, that's all. And you probably haven't even noticed how pretty she is, either. Liz laughed. Whatever the reason, I'm happy for you, Russ. You seem to be in a much better place these days. I am, I said, surprising myself. I really am. After Vivian FaceTimed with London, I asked her to call me back to discuss London's upcoming birthday party. When she did, her tone was markedly icier than it had been over the previous weekend.
I've already made all the arrangements, she said. I've rented one of those bouncy houses to set up in the backyard. I've set up the catering and I've ordered a Barbie birthday cake. I sent out email invitations as well.
Okay, I said, caught off guard by her chilly demeanor. Can you tell me what time the party's going to start?
2.
Nothing else. She seemed to be trying to make me feel purposely uncomfortable. All right, I said, slowly. I assume you sent my parents and Marge and Liz an invite, but I'll confirm with them just in case. When she didn't answer, I went on. And you're still planning to stay in the guest room, right?
Yes, Russ. I'm staying in the guest room. We've already talked about this.
Just making sure, I said before she abruptly ended the call. I let out a long, slow breath. Despite the truce of the previous weekend, it seemed that all bets were off again. Chapter 22. The Eye of the Storm. As a kid, I always loved thunderstorms. Marge thought I was a kook, but when thunderstorms approached, I would feel an electric sense of anticipation, akin to what my dad felt before the World Series. I would insist on turning out all the lights and would move the armchairs closer to the big picture window in the living room. Sometimes I would even toss a bag of popcorn into the microwave, and together Marge and I would snack while we watched the show. In the darkness, we would sit riveted as lightning split the sky in two or flickered in the clouds like strobe lights. During the best storms, the strikes would be close enough for us to feel the static electricity, and I would notice Marge gripping the armrest of her chair. Always, though, we would count how many seconds passed between a flash of lightning and the thunder, tracking the progress of the storm as the center drew near. In the South, thunderstorms don't usually last very long. Typically, they would pass in 30 or 40 minutes, and when the last rumble of thunder faded away, we would reluctantly rise from our chairs and turn on the lights, going back to whatever it was we'd been doing before. Hurricanes were a different story, however. My ever-cautious dad always boarded up the big-picture window, so we couldn't watch the full extent of the spectacle. But I remained fascinated by the apocalyptic winds and torrential rain, and especially the approach of the eye. That surreal moment when the winds abated entirely and it was sometimes even possible to see blue skies overhead. But the calm is only temporary, for the back half of the hurricane still lies in wait, and with it, sometimes even greater destruction. Which, I wonder, is more analogous to life? Or rather, to my life, that terrible year? Was it a series of violent storms bursting in quick succession? Or was it a single, massive hurricane, with an eye that lulled me into believing I'd survived intact, when, in fact, the worst was yet to come? I don't know. All I know for certain is that I hope never to experience another year like it, for as long as I live. London loved her birthday party. The bouncy castle was a hit, she clapped with delight when she saw the cake, and she had fun playing with her friends, especially Bodie. Emily brought him by, but didn't stay, claiming that she needed to meet with the gallery owner to finalize some things for her upcoming show. Another one of the kids' parents had already promised to bring Bodie home. She apologized for not sticking around, but I think we were both eager to avoid any awkwardness with Vivian. Earlier that morning, while Vivian was ferrying London around, she'd driven the SUV from Atlanta. I made a trip to the pet store and set up the aquarium in her room. I chose several colorful fish and stuck a bow on the glass. When Vivian and London returned from art class, I had London close her eyes as I led her to the threshold of her room. She squealed when she opened them and catapulted across the room toward the aquarium.
Can I feed them?
Of course, I said. I'm sure they're hungry. Let me show you how much food to give them, okay? I tapped some food into the lid of the plastic container and handed it to her. She poured it into the fish tank, mesmerized as the fish raced to the surface and started devouring the food. When I glanced over my shoulder at Vivian, I saw that she had her arms crossed, her mouth a tight crease. At the party, however, Vivian was all smiles with everyone, including me and my entire family. She asked my mom to pitch in when she cut the cake, and when London opened a box filled with Barbie accessories from Marge and Liz, she urged London to go over and give them a hug, which London did. Marge leaned in afterward, muttering under her breath. "She's acting as though nothing has changed between the two of you at all," which upon reflection made me even more nervous than Vivian's earlier chilly demeanor. After the party, Vivian took London to the mall. With Halloween coming up, she took it upon herself to help London choose a costume. I used that time to clean up the house, filling garbage bags with paper plates and cups, and wrapping a tray of leftovers to put in the fridge. With that completed, I decided it might be best to make myself scarce for the rest of the evening, and left for my office. I worked into the evening, focusing on the presentations for the law firms that had contacted me. As London's bedtime approached, I texted Vivian, asking if it was time to read to London, only to receive a terse response a while later that London was already asleep. I stayed late at the office that night, but rose early on Sunday to go for a run and shower. I was having breakfast and coffee when I heard Vivian moving around in the guest room upstairs. Though I lingered in the kitchen, wondering if she might want to talk about how well the party had gone, she never made an appearance. I returned to the office to finish the presentations. They were all fairly similar, aware that the truce between Vivian and me had ended, but unclear as to the reason. Was she jealous that London had loved the aquarium? Something I'd selected without Vivian's input? But then Vivian had been cool toward me for nearly a week, I reasoned. I texted Vivian as soon as I got to the office, asking what time she'd planned to leave. She didn't respond until nearly 5, informing me that she'd be leaving in half an hour and forcing me to scramble to get home in time. When I arrived, London came running and jumped in my arms.
"I fed my fish, Daddy, and they were so hungry, and I let Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkle see them too. I held them right next to the glass."
"Have you given them names yet?" She nodded.
"They're all so pretty, so I knew what their names should be. Let me show you."
She pulled me up the steps to her room and pointed out the various fish, reciting their names. Cinderella, Jasmine, Ariel, Belle, Mulan, and Dory, because that's who they remind me of. Downstairs, Vivian was already waiting by the door. She hugged and kissed London goodbye. Then she half-turned in my direction, uttered a perfunctory "bye" without making eye contact, and walked out the door. I should have simply let her go. Instead, after a beat, I followed her out. By then, she was already opening the door to the SUV. "Vivian? Hold up." She turned, her expression stony as I approached. "Are you okay?"
"I'm fine, Russ," she answered, sounding anything but.
"You seem angry."
"Are you seriously asking me this?"
Vivian whipped off her sunglasses.
"Of course I'm angry and disappointed."
"Why? What did I do?"
"Do you really want to get into this now?"
She glared at me over the open car door. "I just want to know what's going on." She closed her eyes as though steeling herself, and when they opened again, I could see rage flaring behind them.
"Why are you dragging London along when you go out with your girlfriend?"
Her question caught me so off guard it took me a second to comprehend what she was talking about.
"You mean Emily?" "Of course I mean Emily."
"She's not my girlfriend," I sputtered.
"London and Modi are friends." "So the two of you take them to the zoo? And the aquarium? Like some kind of double date?" She spat out. "Do you know how confusing that is for her? Why would you do such a thing?"
"I'm not trying to confuse her.
Do you know what London did yesterday? When we went to art class, she ran up and hugged Emily. In front of everyone."
"London hugs everyone."
"She hugged her!"
Vivian shouted, her cheeks flushed.
"I thought you were smarter than that. I thought you were better than that. You don't see me insisting that London hang out with Walter and me, do you? I haven't even told London about Walter. She doesn't even know he exists. I haven't even told her that we're getting divorced."
"Vivian,
don't!"
she snapped.
"I don't want to hear you try to justify why the four of you have been gallivanting around town like you're a family now. You sure didn't wait long, did you?"
"Emily's just a friend," I protested.
"Are you honestly going to stand here and try to convince me that you see Emily just because London and Bodhi are friends?"
she said, sneering.
"Tell me this.
Are you hanging out with the parents of London's other friends, too?
No, but...
And you don't think about her? You don't call her? You're not turning to her for support?
I couldn't deny it, and my expression must have given me away.
I've been trying my best to keep London out of this,
she went on.
While you don't seem to have given any thought as to what might be best for London, or what she might be thinking or feeling. You're just thinking about yourself and what you want. Same old story. You haven't changed at all, have you, Russ?
With that, Vivian got into the SUV and slammed the door. She backed out and roared away while I stood there, frozen and reeling inside. I couldn't sleep that night. Was Vivian right? Had I only been thinking about myself? I replayed all the times I'd seen Emily. I retraced the steps that had led us to the zoo and the aquarium. And I asked myself, if London had a different best friend, would I have visited those places with that friend's parents? In my heart, I knew the answer was no, which made me wonder how much I'd been lying to myself. I felt the repercussions of Vivian's anger a few days later, while sitting in Taglieri's office. He called me because he had an update on the divorce negotiations. I was finally able to spend time on the phone with Vivian's attorney, he said, going through the proposed agreement section by section. He sighed. I don't know what's going on between you and Vivian, but I was anticipating a little give and take, as is the norm in these kinds of negotiations. What I didn't expect was for her to escalate her demands. She wants more? I felt a numbness spreading through me at his words. Yep. Of what? Everything. More alimony, more money when it comes to dividing joint property. How much exactly? When he told me, I blanched. What if I don't have it? Well, for starters, I put the house up for sale. While I'd been dreading Vivian's next move, I felt as if I'd been sucker punched. She also said to tell you that Vivian will be here for Halloween weekend and that she would prefer if you didn't stay in the house this time. Why didn't Vivian just tell me that herself? Because Vivian has decided that henceforth she wants all communications to go through the attorneys. She doesn't want to speak with you directly. Anything else? I said in a daze. She also wants to bring London to Atlanta the weekend of November 13th. And if I say no, she'll probably go straight to the court. And Russ? Taglieri eyed me seriously. This isn't something worth fighting about because you won't win. Unless she's an unfit mother, she has the right to see a daughter. I wouldn't have fought it. I'm just blown away. Do you want to talk about what it is that set her off? Not really, I said. What was the point? What's she saying about London? For now, she wants to have her every other weekend. In the future, though, she's insisting on sole custody. That's not going to happen. Which is yet another reason to put your house up for sale. Even though I've slashed my rates for you, fighting her is going to make this an expensive proposition. On the work front, at least, things were improving. In the week following London's birthday party up until the end of the month, I landed 4 out of the 5 legal firms as new clients. Though it meant I was suddenly drowning in work, as were my tech guys and the camera crew, my work with Taglieri had vastly shortened my learning curve. Meanwhile, the plastic surgeon's campaign kicked off while Marge and Liz were in Costa Rica, and he was thrilled with the results he was seeing. As for London and me, we'd settled into a steady rhythm. The stitches in her forehead came out, and when a follow-up x-ray confirmed there were no broken bones, the splint eventually came off too. She wasn't ready for her piano lessons yet, but she managed fine in art class. Our next date night, I took her out to a fancy dinner at a place called Fahrenheit, which offered glittering Charlotte city views and elegant handwritten menus, the kind of place that Vivian would have loved. As Halloween approached, I didn't see much of Emily. For better or for worse, Vivian's comments had gotten to me. While I had tried to convince myself that our relationship was platonic, I knew it was more than just a friendship. I was definitely attracted to her, and in the evenings I would find myself staring at the phone and wondering if I was somehow damaging London by wanting to reach out to Emily. Don't get me wrong, I still called Emily almost every night, unwilling or unable to give up that comforting ritual. But in the back of my mind I could hear Vivian's voice, and I sometimes hung up feeling confused and guilty. I knew I wasn't ready for a relationship, but was I acting as if I were by calling so frequently?
And what did I really want in the long run when it came to Emily? Could I be content to simply remain friends? Would I be happy for her if she started dating someone else? Or would I feel a twinge at the thought of what might have been?